Benjamin Franklin once said, "The bitterness of poor quality remains long after the sweetness of low prices forgotten." The fact is, quality matters. Join us as we make quality fun, interesting, and accessible to companies of all levels. Quality Matters is a must-listen for all things quality. Listen in, ask questions, and get back to doing what matters most. Quality Matters, brought to you by Texas Quality Assurance, where quality management gets simplified.
Well, hello and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Kyle Chambers with Texas Quality Assurance, and with us again is Caleb Adcock. He's our software manager, right-hand man here in the company, and talking about something maybe a little bit different today. Well, Caleb, I sent you the thing there. So it's kind of a funny question I got from one of our customers after a recent training. And let me see if I can pull it up here. While I'm trying to pull this up, Caleb, if you, I don't know, have you ever been in charge of maintaining a safety program at a previous company? I know you've been over a lot of quality stuff, but yeah. I don't know how much have you ever been in charge of safety and being the safety guy?
No. So, you know, we've always, every place I've worked has always had, or let's see, they've either had a safety person or they didn't implement safety enough to have anyone. So
okay.
I've never been in that in between where like maybe quality is handling safety or something like that. So
gotcha.
Yeah, it's definitely a special breed of person that is a safety manager. So
yeah, it's fun. it's fun. It honestly can be the most rewarding of all of the many jobs I've had and, you know, positions I've held or whatever, but it is definitely one of the most stressful, if not the most stressful. The most stressful is definitely sysadmin, especially when Windows updates, you know. Yeah, that's yeah. More stressful, but safety's right there behind it. Any case, so we did an accident investigation training, and the question he had is, he was like, well, Kyle, all that sounds well and good, but like, what do you do with the guy that just doesn't care? He just doesn't give a crap about anything. he called him Mikey McCareless. So what do we do with Mikey McCareless in a safety program? And it's a good question. It's a good point. You know, when I used to do accident investigation stuff, like, my gosh, I don't know how much time I spent like researching and reading, like, what do people do? Why do they do it? Inevitably, you find all these complicated, crazy ideas out there. And yeah. So, you know, I did what I always do, which is kind of see what everyone else says. And all right, well, y'all got some opinions. Let's see what to do here. And so what we wound up doing, and it worked really well, is accident investigations. Anyone that gets taken to the doctor, you get at least 3 investigations. You got your supervisor doing, whoever your direct supervisor's doing the investigation. You've got a member of management doing the investigation, and you've got at minimum the safety manager doing investigation. If this is something that turned into a recordable, we got a member of top management in. So you got 4 investigations. And people, whenever I tell them that, they're kind of like, that's just way too much. Why are you doing so much? But what it boils down to is we're getting multiple different people to ask similar questions from different perspectives at different times. You tend to get all of the information out of it. And yeah. Caleb, if let's imagine you're the guy, right? So you're the guy, you're at your table, whatever. You do something stupid, you tear up your hand. I might have a big old chunk taken out of my knuckle. That's a real fun story. And you got to go to the doctor. How are you personally going to feel when you go through 4 interviews that are anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour long about what happened?
I mean, definitely, like, I think my first instinct was like, man, this is terrible on top of a doctor visit. I don't want this to happen again, potentially. I mean, I would be annoyed, I would think.
Yeah.
Probably, like you said, you'd be thinking to yourself, why do I have to do this so many times? But
it would put some healthy anxiety in people about accidents, because what you don't want to do, you never want to run this stuff under the rug, right? So that's what happens when someone gets hurt, even if they did something breaking the rules, and the first thing we do is write them up for it. All we're doing is telling folks, don't get caught, right? That's really all we're communicating to them is.
Yeah.
But in this case,
I got to punish you because I know about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But in this case, well, yes, it takes a little more time from supervisors, management, and so forth. But the goal is that we have so few of these that you actually spend less time dealing with it each year. The employee doesn't really get that impression that, oh, man, I got in trouble for it. It's, oh, wow, this is an all-hands-on-deck affair. I'm going to be the center of the talk around here for the next 3 weeks. I'm not going to be able to eat lunch for 3 weeks without someone asking me about this stuff. I don't want to deal with that crap. And that's the type of stuff you get. So you can start to have an impact on culture. We're tacking it from the side. Another thing is I always talk about with safety is QHSE walkthroughs. So you go walk the shop with a guy. And really basic stuff. Slip, trips, falls, anything out of place. We check for lockout, tagout, stickers. We check for, you know, whatever we've got going on. We're checking it all. We do it for about 10 or 15 minutes. Life's good. Well, when you've got that happening, every supervisor, every manager doing those once a week, when an accident occurs, we got 3 or 4 people involved on it. And if you have a culture where reporting nonconformities is just kind of normal and actually you get praised for finding a nonconformity and reporting it, well, that really builds a good safety culture, but that still doesn't change Mikey McCareless. Like, have you worked with one of these guys? I know one guy from a previous company. I'm going to have to change his name and a few details about the story, but
Dan McCareless.
Like this, that just doesn't give a crap, but still gets the job done.
I mean, so as we were talking there, I was sitting there thinking, like, you know, I think with anything policy related or culture related, like, it has to start from the top. You know, you have to have upper management completely bought in. Another, you know, you always hear about, oh, well, you have the leaders of the shop, or, you know, the guy that everybody looks up to, he's got to be bought in with it. Or she, sorry, don't mean to use the gender terms there, but as in they.
I'm going to demand you use he from now on, just so that, you know.
I say he interchangeably.
Yes.
So one of the things was you have to be willing to have consequences. You know, like when I was doing third-party inspections, you go on a job site, you break their safety rules, you're going to get sent home. And then you get to explain to your boss why your company didn't make any money that day because you are potentially banned from the site, or, you know, at least for that day anyway. So that's really, other than, you know, seeing the videos where people, you know, bend their back over backwards or something, you know, other than those, like, that's typically what kept me, was like, yep, got to wear your hard hat, got to wear the goofy side things on the safety glasses and stuff like that. You know, it's like, but I think it starts with, you got to have rules and you got to have the power to enforce them. I mean, I think that's
it does. And so, you know, let me see if I can pull up the question here. Yeah. So he's like, I need to turn my, I think I'm getting some echo here. Let me turn my sound down.
It sounds good on my end.
There we go. Okay. I heard myself through the computer a little bit there. Yeah. He's like, back to the question at hand. Agree with you that we should not punish the person who gets injured, as it would deter the report of the accident. However, what do we do with Mikey McCareless, the employee that, despite having been trained multiple times again and again, has an accident because he is either careless or doesn't follow procedure?
And in this scenario, you have Mikey McCareless, but Mikey McCareless is, it's not a matter of what do you do to make him follow the rules. It's not like, well, now he's been injured because he doesn't follow the rules. So what do you do?
And, you know, it's really tough then, too. I've been involved on this before. An employee gets injured. I'm not going to say it's always the guys that need to go that get injured. Sometimes some of your best guys, bad things happen. They don't pay attention to things, bad scenario, whatever the case may be. But oftentimes, the guys that get hurt, especially more than once, are probably the ones you should get rid of for other reasons as well. Yeah. But what it turns out is it looks like you're firing this person because they cost you a lot of money for their injury. And it's like, no, we're not. We're letting them go because their character trait of carelessness or recklessness has caused lots of issues, their injury being one among them.
Yeah. I mean, if they're breaking safety rules, they're breaking other rules.
Yeah. But it's hard to prove that unless you've got a company culture of write-ups all the time. So it's like, you kind of get in a position where you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And it just, it sucks. And then especially if you've allowed that to continue for a few years and there are multiple instances and everyone knows what goes on. It's a small town. It's a small company. Everyone knows everything. Like, what do you do?
It's a tough situation. You know, it could be one of those things where, you know, you're like thinking for a long time, I need to be enforcing this. And then finally something comes to a head and it just sucks to be that person that gets made the example of, but like, you got to start enforcing somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and whether or not you choose to do it on that guy, depending on his work ethic or the next guy that it happens to, like, you either look at it as like, am I going to lose a productivity person, or am I going to have it happen twice and probably lose even more money than I would?
So that you hit the nail on the head with it, because it unfortunately is the case that a lot of the times the guys in your shop that never really slow down, they don't take a break, they do the work of two or three people in a day. Yeah. They tend to be the ones that don't pay real good attention to this type of stuff. And so it's like, and this is what I ran into. This guy was seriously, he's one of our best hands, fantastic guy. Like, as a person, I really liked him. Really liked him. A lot of fun to be around. But he balked at authority. Non-freaking stop wanted to balk authority.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you do this? You know, I went to management over him. I'm like, look, I don't know how many times I can talk to this guy. Like, I'm going to have to start writing him up. And that is not what I want to do. Like, what are we going to do here? And they never really had a lot of good advice, so I just had to figure it out myself. So I was like, all right, well, this guy's kind of got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's a little cocky, a little arrogant, a little big-headed. We can use that. Let's use it. Let's use that. And so that's when I started doing the walkthroughs. And I knew that he was bucking to get foreman for night shift. And I was like, all right, so I want you to do my QHEZ walkthroughs for me at night. Here, I'll come in. Can you come in 30 minutes early for your shift today? We'll do one together. And I need someone on second shift to do these for me. And, you know, I know you're really trying to work hard to do good around here. Like, I think this will help you.
Yeah.
And so he did it. And mind you, he had been the worst offender. He'd already been injured a couple of times. I mean, he's just, it's terrible stuff.
Yeah.
Within a year, now he never got rid of that chip. Man, that chip stayed firm on his shoulder.
Yeah.
But now he became the safety glasses Nazi, right? Mm-hmm. He became the guy that if you're doing anything stupid, he's making a big whooping to do about it. It was annoying as heck. It's not terribly professional, but this is also a shop, you know, basically roughnecks.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of professional going on anyways, but it worked out well. And so you can use the person's own attributes to your benefit, but it's tough.
I just so happened, you know, when we started talking about this, it's odd. Something you said when we were talking about the topic made me think of the root cause analysis, Apollo root cause analysis book. And so I was like, well, let me see if there's anything in that on, you know, and most of it, like I said, has to do with implementation and all that stuff. And like, how do you create change? But one of the things that it mentioned was putting a value on something. You know, when you put that value on that task of, you know, you made the guy think of it like, okay, well, this is going to help me get foreman. That's become a valuable thing to him now. When before it's like, I don't care if I get injured. I care more about getting recognized for the job I do and doing things.
And that was it with him. I don't believe for a moment he actually cared about safety. Yeah. I just think that he had been lectured by me enough that he knew more than everyone else in the shop. He just didn't care. And so he used it for his own benefit. And it's like, whatever. I really don't care to a degree. I really don't care the angle you get it done from. It's just like, all right, cool. It's getting done.
Yeah. And I mean, that goes back to what I said in the beginning is like, I wasn't an A+ student following safety rules. Well, that's probably a solid B, you know, but it was always because I knew there was consequences, you know, like I was fortunate enough to never be severely, I stepped on a nail one time, which that was somebody else's fault, but, you know, I was very fortunate enough to not be injured. So I didn't have that fear in me. It was just mainly because that's the rules and there's going to be consequences if you don't follow them. So that was my value, was not getting kicked off the job site or, you know, or having a goofy conversation with a safety guy. It's like, just do it.
I only sent someone home once. And that was enough that I never had to do it again. And it was something silly. It was the guy didn't have his steel toes on.
Yeah.
He came to work in tennis shoes. Now, I will say he did have tennis shoes that were the steel-toed tennis shoes. And they were fine. Everything was fine with them. We were good with it. But he came in regular tennis shoes. And I was like, buddy, I'll grab the hammer. Either you be honest with me, I'm grabbing the hammer. And, it wouldn't actually hurt the guys. Just us screwing around. He's like, no, they're not. I was like, buddy, why don't you get your shoes on? And, he started giving me whatever excuse. I was like, you can't work. You can't be here. He's like, what? That's not fair. So-and-so forgot the glasses. I'm like, right. I got glasses I can give him. I ain't got no shoes for you.
Yeah.
You got to go home.
Yeah.
And that little thing. And like, that's exactly how I said it to him. That's the conversation. That's how it went. But that was enough that the rest of the guys in the shop, like, geek, serious. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the concept of like, you have a job to do. I have a job to do. My job is to make sure that you're, coming to work safely or, conducting your work safely. So,
and I mean, I wish I had, this would be really cool. If someone actually could pull some data on this, like it'd be really awesome. In my experience, I have found that you probably got on average about anywhere from 5 to 20% of your shop population that doesn't give a crap.
Yeah.
But if you can get at least 70% on board, that little 20, 10% over there, they become out of place. They become the odd guys, and they will naturally segregate themselves, and they'll kind of figure out that they don't fit in here.
Yeah.
And you tend to lose some folks just because they just didn't fit.
Yeah. I think that I'm just sitting here thinking like of how many welders have had, flash burn multiple times. They always complain about how bad it sucks and how it's terrible, but that's like the fourth time you've had it. Like, you can prevent that. We know what makes that happen. So I don't know if, I don't know if relying on somebody getting injured is the best way to teach them a lesson. Cause you can't rely on that. You can't afford to have injuries as lessons. Like,
now I'm going to have some safety folks listening to this want to scream and shout, but so I will say I'm not a CSP. When you're implementing some changes to improve your safety program, they're not going to be 100% effective day one.
Yeah.
You are unfortunately going to be given the opportunity to use the next one or two incidents to teach some lessons.
Yeah.
Because if it's already that bad, you can't turn it around in 30 days because people's behavior just doesn't change that fast.
Yep.
So you're going to have a couple more opportunities, but that just sounds that's dirty to say, but it's true.
I'm pretty sure there's some companies out there that also have monetary incentives, right? Like where they say, if we haven't had any accidents, then you guys' pay rates, maybe, I don't know, bonuses.
So, and that stuff too, it sounds great, but it does scare me because, again, that's the fear that we're going to run stuff under the rug.
Yep.
And that's what we don't want. And so this is what drives me crazy when I look at all of this safety stuff. I mean, wherever it is, I'm like, guys, I know what you're trying to do, but you're not getting the result you're aiming for. I mean, that's the whole reason when we do corrective actions, you have to have the evaluation of effectiveness.
Yeah.
Some of these companies put so much money into these programs. And then once you tell people that they have an opportunity to make an extra buck, you can't take that away. You take that away, even if they never got the bonus, you take away the option for the bonus and they're pissed off.
So I will say, and this is one of the most, I don't know how they did it. I think it was because, I don't know if I should even use specific names here, but I was on a job site, massive job site for a large...
we'll call it Acme Chemical Corporation, and there's coyotes running around everywhere.
Yeah. It was a very, very large place on the coast in Texas, and their building, and it was ran by a very large group. And I went on site and they had a policy where, it was a general lightning strike, but I'm pretty sure theirs was like 45 minutes and it was within 10 miles. And wow. I was on site one day doing an inspection, and we sat there for 4 hours because it'd be like 45 minutes. Oh, then there was a lightning strike 9 miles away. And I mean, every safety rule you could think of, like they had like a three-step ladder, you'd have the ropes mm-hmm. going up, you'd have, you know, mm-hmm. put a harness on to walk up like 4 stairs or whatever. And it was just like, man, these guys really care about it. And at the time I was like, is this an excess? You know, but like something made that company very, very, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't tolerated. If you weren't following those crazy rules, like you weren't going to be on the site, you weren't going to work for the company.
Yep.
So
I struggle with the same thing as well, because I've gone to similar type sites and I've had to do mm-hmm. this, you know, whole same thing. And it's like, you question, like, is this overkill?
Yeah.
Or is it not? And then, but then you really have to look at it, some of it in context, because if we tout that as this is not just the ideal, but this is really the minimum version of good, because you could still get better off of that, but this is the minimum version of good where we're at that, you know, limit where no one's getting hurt. How many businesses can do something similar?
Yeah.
You take a shop with 50 people. Can they do that? How do you handle those differences? And so I don't know. I mean, I think it's just something that folks really have to look at and evaluate within their shop of how much do we put into this.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the risk management aspects, right? Like you ask yourself, yeah. like, what is, so that site, I mean, it was literally thousands of people in this massive tent, because they had
well,
a tent.
That presents all sorts of new risks that you would never have in a small business. Yeah. I mean, none of you guys knew each other. No one knew how anyone worked. No one was familiar with the area.
Well, I mean, like whenever the lightning strikes happened, they sent everybody to the, yeah, it was basically like their cafeteria for just a massive job site. Gotcha. And for 4 hours, people sat there in a mass, thousands of people that were being paid sat there for 4 hours in a tent, you know, It's like, I don't even think that it even rained at this. I could be wrong, yeah. but like, it's just like, holy cow. And like every 45 minutes, the dude would be like, oh, we got another one. So to your point, it's like, I don't know how you evaluate that and how you deem that reward greater than the risk, you know, I guess is a simple way of putting it, but.
Yeah. And I can't say I have a general answer. I think the answer really has to be individual to the company and really assess your process, your people, your culture, your industry, all that. But I mean, let's think about it. When we do have the incredibly rigid and structured programs, you're effectively treating each individual person as no longer a person. They are no longer a human being. I don't mean it like dehumanizing. I'm just meaning from a simple system base. Like they're treated as a unit of production. And we can't really rely on them thinking and making decisions. We have to run them through the flow chart so that all the decision paths are already made for them. And you just, if you go next step, next step, next step, it'll work out. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah.
A small business, you're making each piece of the puzzle as you put it together.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to look at people from a different perspective. Like we can't look at people as simple units of production because we don't have the process mapped out yet. We're in the process of building the map. And so you got to have different caliber people.
Or your safety record as like a sales point or something, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I was at the Turpin shop, I mean, it took us about 3 years to build a good safety program. It took about 3 years to do it. And I mean, that was a lot of effort, but we did. And I mean, I think we went like 2 years, no recordables, whereas we had, gosh, I don't know how many that first year, and we had far fewer employees.
Well, so what does a good safety program look like? I mean, I know that's a very deep.
Well, this would have to, like, we have to consider this a small business. And I mean, even like on the 200 employee or less smaller side, it really does need to be, you've got every supervisor on the floor minimum once a week doing a walkthrough.
Okay.
Every member of management minimum once a week doing a walkthrough. As a member of leadership, you never walk through the shop floor without identifying something to talk about. Now, it's annoying as hell because you're in a rush, you're in a hurry, you've got somewhere important to be, you've got something important to do. If I'm walking through the shop, I have no choice but to spend at least 30 seconds with someone.
Yep.
Also, if anyone gets hurt, make it your mission as that manager or supervisor in the company to stop by and just tap the guy on the shoulder. How's it going today? You doing good? You need anything? All right. Take care. That's all you have to do. Just make sure they know we're here. We see you. We care. That's also should make you feel good. That should also make you nervous.
Yeah.
But I can't say the things that make a good safety program. I could write as a procedure. I mean, it has to be, you have to manage your people. Now, you add on all the safety procedures and rules and programs, and you got a fantastic program. But you got to have managers managing people.
That's what I was thinking earlier is like, it all comes down to building that culture, creating your champions of the culture, and, you know, and then enforcing it.
And oh, here's another one. You talk about champions of the culture. Okay. So there's another incident. I remember this guy. What was his name? I should share his actual name. We'll call him Tommy. Sorry. Tommy was supervisor for another shop. And he had an attitude. Boy, did he have an attitude. Funny guy, but he had an attitude. He could cook too. If we had a company cookout, you wanted him there. Stuff might be real hot and spicy, but it was good. Any case, he drove the forklift all the time. He was probably the best forklift driver we had. Yeah. Most experienced with it, man. He could get in and out of the tightest spots. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But he drove that thing so stupid and reckless. And I don't know how many times I talked to him. And so he got it in his head, you know, because I'd tell him, like, look, you got to honk when you come up to an intersection. Just simple stuff. Just beep. Just honk. Yeah. Don't just blow through. He's like, well, they need to know I'm coming. They can hear the forklift. I'm like, anyone else out there can be having a bad day and not pay attention to you. You're going too fast, too. Just honk. Yeah. Well, he took it upon himself to just beep, 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 beep the heck out of it. You know what, though? Everyone knew where he's at.
Yeah.
No one ever had to wonder where he was. And he couldn't drive as fast if he was paying attention to honking.
Yeah.
But yeah, but little stuff like that. Over time, he actually became a forklift trainer.
Okay.
But you just take like the little, just give someone something tiny and let them think they're doing it out of defiance. Don't give a crap. Whatever, go for it.
Well, reverse psychology there.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much. You just give them something. And as long as you get the result you want, don't worry about the motivation. If you're getting the result you want but that person's motivation is they're trying to like, whatever, I don't care. I got you to do the right thing. Awesome.
Well, so I think we've figured out today that safety relies on management of people.
Yeah.
There's no special formula or anything like that, or no procedure you can write. I know I will say that the most dangerous job I've ever had was, I was in the Navy. You have issues with safety there, but they have the authority to, you know, they have their own military police. So, you know, you break safety rules, you go get put in the brig or, you know, you get your pay taken from you. So, it's a little different. But
there was one thing, sorry, there's one thing here that I do want to add that I forgot about is, so if we do have someone, so let's take that we have a certain someone that we're monitoring. I kept with me all the time. I've done this for years. You just get like a little composition notebook or whatever, you know, just put a little manila folder on it so I can close it up. No one sees my notes. That's all it is. But I would keep one of those for several employees at a time. So at any given time, I was keeping notes on at least one, if not four or five people. And every time I'd make a walkthrough in the shop, if I knew certain folks were a little more likely to cause me some issues with safety, get into an accident, damage equipment, whatever it is, I just make a note of how many times I talked to them. And so it's not like I was necessarily singling them out to talk to them, just singling them out for documentation. So as I'm going through the shop, hey, reminded so-and-so he needed to put his safety glasses on, reminded so-and-so about steel toes, reminded so-and-so about posture while lifting something, reminding him about how he's holding a nail gun, reminding him about this, whatever it might be. And I just keep tabs on these guys. And the reason being is so that I could go to HR and I'd say, look, here's a guy. I'm actively monitoring. I was careful about words there because, again, it's not that I'm trying to nitpick or single someone else out. I want to observe their safety behavior. I want to monitor their safety behavior. That is totally different from picking on someone because, again, that's the stuff we have to worry about these days.
And you want to make sure that if something happens, you're not accidentally picking on somebody.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
We're really good at jumping to conclusions. If you're like, man, I'm always seeing that guy without his goggles. Like, well, let me check my notes. Yep. I am always seeing that guy without
always goggles. I hadn't said nothing to him in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's not always.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that's a good point. So it's for, you know, it's protection on both sides there, but I would do that. And I would keep those notes on folks for a while. And, you know, once things improved, I'd stick it off in my file cabinet and come back to it later. And yes, I'm the computer geek and the software developer. And I love paper. I love paper. I'm very tactile. But yeah, that's the last thing there. And then just let HR know that you've got someone that you're monitoring, keep tabs on them. And most of the time they improve. In my experience, they either improve or they just realize that they no longer fit in and it's just not a fun place for them to work anymore. And they job bounce. It's like,
okay, so you're saying with the right culture, they eventually realize, I hate these safety rules. Everybody else seems to not mind it. And maybe I'll just go find somewhere else. So,
Yeah. I mean, and we had a few guys do that. And I was like, you know, do an exit interview with them, you know, if they do it. And I had a couple of guys who were like, yeah, you changed the way you work around here. I don't like it. You make me do this, make me do that. I'm not free. I'm not free to do my job. I'm like, well, man, I hate you feel that way. I really do. But hey, good luck to you, pal.
I think one of the things also that needs to be addressed is like, you know, ask people why. You know, if they're saying certain things or they don't want, or, you know, you ask them what happened or you're doing, and they say, well, I just made a mistake, or, you know, I hit the wrong button, or I was going too fast. And you say, why?
Yeah.
You know, and if you can figure out that why, you know, you may not be able to, but if you can figure out that why, that's going to give you a lot of information on what changes you need to make or, you know, so
I mean, and that's root cause analysis at its simplest, but that's perfect though. Like you're walking through the shop. Someone doesn't have, again, I use glasses because it's the easiest example, but it could, you know, just as easily be someone bending over when they're back and instead of bending over, lifting improperly, getting on my tongue tied here. But yeah, you just ask, why were you doing that? Oh, I just wasn't paying attention. Why weren't you paying attention? You get hit on the head this morning. Have you had your coffee today? Do you need some coffee?
Yeah.
No, that ain't it. Well, why ain't you paying attention? And then they get a stupid look on their face like, all right, do better next time.
Yep. We're sure. Well, so we've solved all the safety problems. I guess we'll move on to the next.
That's it. We just solved the world's safety issues.
Yeah.
We don't need OSHA no more.
No.
Oh man. All right. Well, any final thoughts before we wrap up here, buddy?
I don't think so. I think just quality and, you know, or I mean the culture and the champions and just enforcing what you stand for, making sure you're doing what you
it
say.
Really
you
is. Cool. All right. Well, I will finish it there. Everyone, if you ain't already, you can find us wherever you want. YouTube. We are on Rumble, Spotify, iTunes, even on Audible, you name it, we're there. So download it, like, subscribe. It really does help. We'd love to hear your comments. So if you got any comments, any questions, chime in, and we'd love to hear from you. Y'all take care.